Okay, so welcome back. Remember to keep your mugs safe. And I think the equations and Marcos are back. So Marcos will talk about resurgence and renormalons in integrable QFTs.
Okay, thanks for giving me this second opportunity for my talk. So I will talk about resurgence and renormalons in integral quantum field theories, and this is work with my postdoc Ramon Miravillas and my student Tomás Reis. Okay, so we work on integrability because integrability gives us exact and non-perturbative answers for observables in QFT. But this is rather an exceptional situation, and in generic situations, we still use perturbative series to obtain asymptotic expansions. So the kind of observables that we compute in many quantum field theories are, say, for example, ground state energies, and they are given by functions of the coupling constant G. And perturbation theory doesn't give us exact answers, but it gives us is asymptotic expansions. They give us asymptotic series in the coupling constant G. Okay, let me see if I can. They give us asymptotic series in the coupling constant G. And we know that these perturbative series are not the full answer. In general, in quantum field theory, on top of the perturbative series, we also have non-perturbative corrections. And non-perturbative corrections have a different mathematical structure. They involve exponentially small terms in the coupling constant of this type, an exponential of minus some quantity divided by the coupling constant. And these type of terms are invisible to perturbative series like that. So in general, we expect that in quantum field theory, a physical observable will be given by the sum of a perturbative series plus an infinite series, possibly, of exponentially small corrections. And this is actually the answer that is suggested when you do a saddle point approximation to a path integral. When you do a saddle point approximation to a path integral, you will get typically the contribution of the leading saddle, which gives you a perturbative series of this structure. And then you can have sub-leading saddles with non-trivial actions, and this gives you this type of exponential here. And when you do the expansion of the path integral of a non-trivial saddle, you will get an additional non-perturbative series around this additional saddle with a constant C, and then some prefactor G to the minus B, and then another power series here, okay? So the fact that we organize our life as perturbative series plus non-perturbative corrections is actually what the path integral suggests in many situations. Now, the formal object, so if you want to really combine a perturbative series plus exponentially small corrections, you have to introduce a new mathematical object. And this mathematical object that combines both types of terms is known in the mathematical literature as a trans-series. Okay? So a trans-series is just a generalization of perturbative series, including non-perturbative corrections. Now, making sense of this object is very subtle. Why? Because the perturbative series, the asymptotic expansions to observables in quantum field theory, are actually divergent series. The coefficients grow factorially, so this series has zero radius of convergence and is not really mathematically defined in a function. And actually, one can see that when one does this type of exponential small corrections, the series appearing here are also factorially divergent. Okay? So in principle, this answer is purely formal. You don't know how to extract numbers out of it when I give you the equations like this. There are, however, resummation methods which are very powerful and which were developed in a very general framework called the theory of resurgence, which make it possible to resum all these divergent series under mild conditions and produce actual numbers. I'm not going to give you the technical details of this procedure because I don't have enough time, but there are such methods to produce numbers out of divergent series. And this actually happens under very mild conditions. So usually you can produce numbers out of the series appearing in quantum theory. Okay?
Can you say something about
these are just additional exponentially small corrections with bigger exponents here. Okay? So usually you have an infinite series of exponentially small corrections. Okay? So this is just the first exponentially small correction, but there could be, for example, something proportional to e to the minus 2a over g. Yeah, there could be also other A's. There could be other A's with bigger rear part or something like that. Okay, so in principle, you expect a very complicated series, a very complicated structure of non-perturbative corrections, which you order essentially by the strength of this number A. Okay.
Yeah,
Nothing is obvious here, okay? Nothing is obvious, of course, you know. You need a theory to do this, right? Well, as I said, there are higher exponential small corrections which can be multiples of these, and there can be additional actions involved in the game, and so on. Okay, so I think this formula is quite illustrative, but it's definitely not a complete formula. We would have to introduce additional things, but hopefully this will be clearer in with the examples I will show later in the talk. Sorry? Transitives are formal logits. So in principle, there should be a choice of constants here. There should be a choice of constants such that you recover the exact answer of this observable in a unique way, with a unique choice of this constant C. Okay? But transitives are usually parametrized by these numbers here. Okay? Well, yeah, it's unique. I mean, when it exists, let me show you the conjecture that I will give you here. So this kind of idea suggests that in a quantum theory, observables with an asymptotic expansion can be computed exactly by an appropriate resummation of a given transitive. Okay, this means that the transitive is unique, and the transitive is obtained by adding appropriately exponentially small terms to the asymptotic expansion. So you have to start with the asymptotic expansion, which is obtained in conventional perturbation theory, but on top of that, you have to add exponentially small terms, which are these non-perturbative effects. And this is what we call the weak resurgence conjecture in a paper with Lorenzo Di Pietro, Sverbeglieri, and Cerone. And what is the appealing aspect of this conjecture is that it gives a generalized semi-classical picture of observables in quantum theories. So it means that you can decode an observable in a quantum theory by adding a perturbative series and these non-perturbative corrections. And actually, this conjecture is actually known to be true in, for example, many examples in one-dimensional quantum mechanics. Now, the idea, the kind of program, is to see if this type of conjecture is valid, for example, in realistic quantum field theories or in toy model quantum field theories, so beyond quantum mechanics. And to test these conjectures, we need the ingredients. So the ingredients for testing this conjecture are the perturbative series and the non-perturbative corrections. And of course, we know how to obtain perturbative series. This is what we learn in graduate courses in quantum field theory. But the question is, how do you actually compute exponentially small corrections in quantum field theory? That's a kind of non-trivial question. And this is the subject of my lens transparency. So what is the physical origin? The first thing you should ask in order to compute these exponentially small corrections, what is the physical origin of these exponentially small corrections? So there is one obvious source for exponential small corrections in quantum theories, which are instantons. And instantons are non-trivial classical configurations which lead to additional saddle points in the path integral. So in principle, if you expand the path integral as a non-trivial saddle, you will get an exponentially small correction, which is the kind of answer that we saw before. And historically, instantons were regarded as the building blocks of these mathematical transitives. And they actually are the building blocks of transitives in many examples. For example, in quantum mechanics and in some supersymmetric theories. So one could think that one can actually reconstruct quantum field theory by combining perturbation theory plus instanton physics. But this actually turns out not to be true. And this was a very important discovery in the 1980s and 80s, that there is a new source of exponentially small corrections in many quantum field theories, and this source of exponential small corrections was baptized by the name of renormalons. So renormalons was, I think the name was found in a way as something similar to instantons, because it was thought that renormalons will share many properties of instantons. So renormalons are very mysterious. I'm going to characterize them by two or three properties here. And the first property was conjectured actually by Parisi and Toft, and they were focusing on these exponential small corrections in asymptotically free theories, so at infinite volume. So what they conjecture is that renormalons are sources of exponential small corrections, and these sources of exponential small corrections, according to them, would have an universal form. And this universal form would be an exponential of minus an integer number over twice beta zero in absolute value, which is the coefficient of the beta function, and g. Now, if you look at this formula, it looks very much like one instanton correction in which the action of the instanton would be 1 over 2 times beta 0, okay? And D would be something like the instanton number. Now, in an asymptotically free theory, this type of correction will give you what is called a power correction. So a power of lambda over mu to the a power of D of lambda over mu. So lambda here is the dynamical scale of the asymptotically free theory. And you see that when mu is very large, these are small corrections, okay? So these are called sometimes power corrections for people working in QCD. And the idea would be that these are like instanton corrections in the sense that there is a minimal contribution, which is 1 over 2 times beta 0, and then there will be integer multiples of it. And this was the idea they were considering. So I didn't tell you what is the origin of these things, but let me first give you another property they have. Well, the other property they have is that these exponentially small corrections are actually more important than instantons. And this is typically because the strength of this exponential is bigger than the strength of an exponential corresponding to an instanton. And one way of seeing this is actually to consider the Larchen limit of these theories. When you consider a theory in which there is a Larchen limit, it turns out that this exponential small correction survives the Larchen limit. This is known to be the, this is actually not the case for instantons. If you have an exponential small correction due to an instanton, typically it will disappear in the top limit. But Renormal corrections are not like this. And this is precisely because beta zero typically scales like n. And then this exponential small correction actually goes like e to the minus 1 over lambda, where lambda is a tough parameter. So these exponential small corrections, in contrast to instanton corrections, survive the large L. And the last property of Renormals, which is important, is that they do not have a known semi-classical description. Instantons are somewhat easy, because you just look at saddle points of the path integral, you span around them, and you have your instanton contributions. Renormals do not correspond to non-trivial saddle points. So they are very strange objects, because they are corrections to the asymptotic series, which comes from, if you want, from the trivial saddle point, but they do not have a known saddle point description. Okay? And this is what they are different from instantons, which have a semi-classical description. So if you don't have a semi-classical description, how do you detect such an exponentially small correction? Now, the key idea to actually find that these objects exist is to use a connection between the large order behavior of the perturbative series and the existence of non-perturbative corrections. And this is one of the key ideas of the theory of resurgence, that there is such a connection between the perturbation theory at a large number of loops and exponentially small corrections in quantum field theory. And I'm going to kind of summarize the result for you. This is actually something that can be shown in one page by using techniques of resurgence and Borel resummation. But the main idea is that if you know how the perturbative series behave at a large number of loops, you can predict the shape of this exponential small correction as follows. As I told you, An, these coefficients, grow typically factorially. But when you study the precise asymptotics of these coefficients, you can refine this factorial growth into a gamma function, gamma n plus b, and a subleading exponential growth of the form a to the minus n. So typically, all the perturbative series that you find in quantum theory are going to grow factorially exactly in this form. And you see that this involves two additional parameters, a and b. Now, the result I want to quote is that if the perturbative series diverges like this, then it's going to be, there is going to be an exponentially small correction in which a is going to be the weight of the exponentially small correction, and this b is going to be the prefactor of the coupling constant in front of this exponentially small correction. So this means that if you know how the perturbative series grows factorially with precision, you can actually predict the existence of non-perturbative corrections. Of course, in some cases, these non-perturbative corrections are due to instantons, but in other cases, are going to be renormals. Now, how do you obtain information of the perturbative series at very large number of loops? So this is actually a very hard problem, because it's hard to push perturbative series in realistic theories to very high order. Now, some people have tried to do this by numerical methods. For example, you can work in lattice perturbation theory, and for example, Bauer, Valli, and Pineda in lattice QCD, they were able to obtain maybe 40 terms of the perturbation theory of some observables, and from this they could extract the coefficients A and B numerically. Another option to actually detect this large order behavior of the perturbative series is to work at large n. And the nice thing of working at large n is that the diagrams get order by powers of n, and then you can see that the leading contribution for at large n in renormalizable theories and many quantum field theories is of bubble-like diagrams that look like this. And if you focus on the large order behavior of these diagrams, you can actually produce reliable estimates of these coefficients A and B numerically. And this has been essentially the main method that people have used to detect renormalons in asymptotically free theories. So some limited information has been obtained in this way. Now, what is the role of integrability in all this? Well, many asymptotically free theories in two dimensions are integrable. Their S matrix is certainly known, and this includes important models like the O and sigma model, the Gross-Neuber model, and so on. And the key question is, can we use these models to obtain information on renormals? Okay. So far, integrable models have not been very much exploited to obtain information on renormalons, and the idea to try to clarify what is the role of renormalons in asymptotically free theories is to look at integrable models. Now, in order to do that, we have to do something very, 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 very unnatural, essentially, which is to take the exact answers provided by integrability and decode them in the form of a perturbative series plus exponentially small corrections. And this is very unnatural in many contexts because, in many cases, not even perturbative series are easy to extract from, for example, the answer given by the Bethe ansatz. And this was already noted in the founding paper by Leaf and Lineger, in which they noted that using the exact Bethe ansatz equation for the ground state energy of the Bose gas at gamma equals zero, here gamma is the coupling constant, so producing the perturbative series was so hard that it was actually even better to use dietary perturbation theory. So the Bethe ansatz answer is very often very unnatural to obtain some perturbative information from it. And this has been essentially a problem for making the connection between Bethe ansatz solutions and perturbative theory. Now, here in the remainder of this talk, I will focus on very particular observable of integrable field theories in two dimensions that you can study from many perspectives. In particular, you can find its exact expression using integrability. And this is the ground state energy of the 2D integrable model once you couple a chemical potential H to a global conserved charge Q. So essentially, you take the Hamiltonian of the model, you add H times Q, where Q is a conserved charge of the model, and then you take the trace of this operator, you take the logarithm, you divide by the volume, and the volume in space-time, and then you define this free this quantity I will call the free energy. Now, the role of this chemical potential is very important because remember that I want to obtain something that I can understand in perturbation theory. And if I have an external parameter H, I can exploit asymptotic freedom because I know if H is going to be very much larger than the dynamical scale of the model, I will be able to use perturbation theory thanks to asymptotic freedom. So actually, this observable in this regime will have a perturbative series, an asymptotic expansion, in powers of the running coupling constant G at the scale set by H. So this is something that you can compute in perturbation theory. It's hard to compute it, but you can do it at the very first orders. And in some cases, large n, you can do it even at a very large loop order. Now, on the other hand, you can study this observable by using integrability, using the Bethe ansatz. This was pointed out by Polyakov and Bigman long ago. So essentially, you have to consider a Fermi density of Bethe roots, epsilon theta, which satisfies an integral equation of this type. So in this integral equation, you can see that this Fermi density is going to vanish at the endpoints. And then here you find the chemical potential H, and then here M is the mass gap of the theory. Okay? So it's actually the mass of the particles which are essentially condensed by the action of the chemical potential H. And the kernel of this integral equation can be computed from the S matrix plus an ansatz of what are the particles which appear when you turn on this H. H is a chemical potential, and when you turn it on, there will be a density, non-trivial density of particles that appear, and these are the particles whose mass is given here. And then once you solve this equation, you can compute this free energy by just using this equation here. So this is an example of the thermodynamic Bethe ansatz, and this gives you an exact expression for F of H. Now, you have then the possibility of studying this observable both in perturbation theory and exactly. Okay? And the question is, can we use this observable as a proof of renormalons in asymptotically free theories? Well, the question is how you would detect renormalons in these quantities. So remember that, as I told you, there is one possibility, which is to study the perturbation theory of this observable at very large loop order. And this is hard in directly in perturbation theory. There was a very beautiful result by Dimitro Bolin, which actually made possible to extract very long perturbative series for FH directly from the beta answer. So the work of Dimitro was very important because he actually broke this kind of limit that was set by the beta ansatz in terms of obtaining perturbation series. So there was this abstraction that was already noted by Leaf and Liniger of obtaining perturbative series from the beta ansatz, and essentially the work of Dimitro made possible to actually break this constraint. Now you can produce them very long perturbative series, and you can now study these series numerically to try to see if there are renormalons there. This is some work I did with Thomas Reis, and also there was very impressive work here done in Budapest by Zoltán, Janos, Arpacegedus and their collaborators. And actually, when you do this, you confirm that exactly you have a first renormalon correction as predicted by Parisi and Toft at exactly the value d equal 2. So you have a quadratic power correction that is confirmed by this numerical analysis. And this was important because, you know, people didn't even, were not completely sure if this renormalon correction would exist, and this gave a very kind of clear confirmation. One can also work at large n, either diagrammatically or using the beta ansatz, and one can also obtain some results in this way. But these two approaches to the renormalon problem in integral models have a problem, is that either you work numerically and then higher exponential corrections are hard to see because, you know, when you work numerically, the smaller the corrections, the harder it is to detect them. And to work at large n, you don't know if what you are obtaining, you know, can have like non-trivial 1 over n corrections, and this is also important. So what we try to do is to actually extract these exponentially small corrections from the beta ansatz exactly at finite n, without relying on numerics, not on large n approximations. And this is the result that we obtained last year. And actually the way to do it was to exploit an old method to understand the beta ansatz equation, which was the Wiener-Hof method. And this was a method that was already obtained before in order to extract perturbation theory from the beta ansatz. And I want to mention here the work of two Hungarian physicists, Hasen Fratz and Niedermayer, who did very important work. They were actually able to calculate the mass gap of the theory as a function of the dynamical scale exactly in their work. There was also work of Janos on the principal chiral field. But in this work that it was done in the early 90s, people were interested just in perturbation theory, and they were neglecting precisely all these exponentially small corrections. Now, in integrability, people have actually looked at these exponentially small corrections in the Sine-Gordon model. There was very nice work by Samolochikov, and essentially what we did was generalizing this work of Samolochikov to asymptotically free theories. And that is highly non-trivial, because in the work of Samolochikov, if you are familiar with it, essentially all these exponentially small corrections come from poles. And the crucial mathematical aspect of asymptotically free theory is now you have branch cuts together with poles, and this is actually the signal of renormalons in this kind of things. So there are no renormalons in the Sine-Gordon model, and it's only when you go to asymptotically free theories you will see these branch cuts which signal renormalons. And once you do this, you can actually obtain fully analytic results for these exponentially small corrections. Now let me just give you a very sample answer. For the O3 sigma model, we find that this FH has a perturbative piece, and then you have an exponentially small correction, which multiplies a non-trivial power series here. Notice that some of the coefficients of this series can be complex, but this is part of the mathematics of trans-series. The coefficients can be complex. And then you can push the calculation of this power series that multiplies exponentially small corrections quite high. And this actually was done by the Budapest group, by Zoltán, Janos, Hedus, and Bona in a recent paper. So you can actually find reliable finite end results for these non-perturbative corrections in these integrable models. Now, yes? Sorry?
It's plus minus, right? So, but there's
only. Yes, this is actually something that I didn't have the time to explain. The thing is that this series is diverging, okay? So you have to make sense of this series by you choose by doing what is called lateral Borel resummation. And in doing lateral Borel resummation, you have to choose an integration contour either above or below the real axis. And then you have to make a choice of what is your direction of resummation for the perturbative series itself. And this choice of lateral Borel resummation is correlated with this plus minus sign here, in order that the final result is real. So this is one of the part of the kind of subtle aspects of transseries. The coefficients can be not only imaginary, but actually ambiguous, and this ambiguity is related to your choice of Borel resummation. In other words, the coefficients appearing in transseries are not intrinsically defined. They depend on your choice of lateral resummation in such a way that at the end of the day, nothing depends on your choices, and you get a unique real answer. Okay.
But shouldn't you then have also a plus minus on the f per?
Sorry.
Shouldn't you then put a plus or minus on the f?
Yeah, there should be. But here you kind of understand this because this series is asymptotic. So this is just like a remnant of your resummation procedure for this series. But this is actually quite common. If you see table formula for the AD function, you will see the same kind of notation. The AD function also has this sort of phenomenon, and you also see that you will have plus or minus signs that are understood to be related to the Borel resummation of the original perturbative series. Okay, so it's sort of a standard for asymptotic series and corrections. So perhaps what is nice about this approach is that in principle gives you all exponentially small corrections. Now this is very beautiful because these exponentially small corrections, as I said, they are turned out to be related to the poles and branch cuts of the kernel of the Betti Ansatz equation. And the most striking consequence of this method is that there are corrections which are not of the form predicted by Parisiantov. Parisiantov told you that this correction should be an integer divided by beta zero times g. Okay? An integer divided by twice beta zero times g. But actually, when you do the exact analysis in interval theories, you find that there is a non-trivial correction here, 1 minus r in the denominator. And this correction actually vanishes, depends on the model. So this is the value for the Gross-Neve model, and this is the value for the principal chiral field. But you see that this vanishes at large n, but is non-trivial for finite n. So the Parisiantov conjecture is valid in the large n limit, but it's actually false at finite n. And this is actually one of the useful aspects of being able to work at finite n, because at large n, you wouldn't see this correction. You would see some sort of exponentially small corrections that would essentially kind of fuse together, okay, when you work at large n. But at finite n, you can see that there is a finer structure in the exponentially small corrections. So we obtain, these are actually Renormalon type of corrections, but we also obtain instanton-like corrections. For example, what I show you in the O3 sigma model, this exponential correction is probably due to instantons. And in general, in the ON nonlinear sigma model, we find a leading Renormalon singularity plus corrections of this form. And you see these corrections will survive the large n limit. So these are probably instanton corrections because here you have an n, here you also have an n. So this will survive. And this probably are due to non-unstable instanton corrections in the ON nonlinear sigma model, but this is again a conjecture. One should actually work harder to try to understand this. So one actually can verify, so all these corrections are very nice, but one can actually even go further and check that these corrections actually control the large order behavior of the perturbative series as expected from the theory of resurgence. Remember that I told you that there is a link between exponential small correction and perturbative theory a large number of loops. And this is a strong check that the results that we have obtained are correct, and we were very careful in trying to make this connection precise. And in addition, all the available evidence we have indicate that exact results for integrability can be recovered by resumming the resulting transseries. So this is in agreement with this resurgence conjecture that I presented you at the very beginning, that you can recover exact results by going beyond the asymptotic expansion given by perturbation theory and adding systematically these non-perturbative corrections. I have to mention here that in the work of Zoltan and Janos, in the O4 sigma model, this was tested really with huge precision because they were able to obtain 2,000 terms for the perturbative series. And then this means that they could do this check in kind of very precise, with very precise numerical precision. And let me actually point out that, as far as I know, these are the only available analytic results on exponentially small corrections at finite n in non-supersymmetric quantum field theories. I mean, there are other models, like, for example, two-dimensional QCD, where you can get similar results. But in asymptotically free theories, I think these are the only available analytic results. And as I said, you know, this already gives you counterexamples to this Parisitov conjecture. So let me come to the conclusions. So I think the most important conclusion here is that conventional perturbation theory should be replaced by resorption perturbation theory, in which you have to complete perturbative series by adding these exponential small corrections in the form of this new mathematical object called transseries. And this framework seems to be powerful enough to include realistic quantum field theories. I have to say that people working in QCD have been doing these kind of things for many years, but of course you have many limitations about foundational aspect of renormalness in QCD because we don't have all these techniques, and the idea was precisely to use integrability to actually shed light on these foundational principles. But in principle, this framework should accommodate even QCD and Yamin's theory. Now, I think also a very important thing is that is just a kind of declaration of ignorance. We do not really know how to compute exponential corrections to perturbative series in QFT. So you take your favorite textbook, it will tell you how to compute the asymptotic expansion in full detail, but we don't really have general methods to compute exponential small corrections. Instanton calculus was developed historically as a way to supply this. But instanton calculus already in itself is quite difficult. Even if you have a semi-classical picture, it's very difficult. We know that it has, sometimes it breaks down due to infrared problems. But renormalons are even more subtle than instantons. They are not described by subtleties of the path integrals. And for example, if I wanted to calculate the renormalons for FH directly, I wouldn't know how to do it. There is no recipe in the books to take the Lagrangian of the ON sigma model and compute the renormalon corrections from it. There is no recipe in the books. There is no such a renormalon calculus. Now, integrability makes a difference. It actually helps us to understand this problem because it gives you analytic results from the Bethe ansatz for exponentially small corrections in these asymptotically free theories. And this vindicates the renormalon picture, but with some subtleties. It makes it also more complicated. For example, this Parisitov conjecture, which tried to predict the general pattern for these renormalon corrections, turns out to be just a Larsen approximation. And then an obvious question is, could we have a more general conjecture describing all possible exponential small corrections in asymptotically free theories? So this is still an open problem. Some people, like Martin Lusser, for example, think that you won't have a general pattern. You know, this is just observable dependent, and you know, you can have all kinds of things. But maybe there is a more kind of general conjecture. And in a sense, the most important open problem is to be able to calculate these transitions from first principles, in particular for renormalons. So these are really completely unexplored sectors of the path integral of asymptotically free theories. And what I find very interesting from the application of integrability is that integrality is able to predict these corrections, so this will be a signpost for any future renormalon calculus. If somebody, will find a way to do renormalon calculus in asymptotically free theories, at least the results of integrability will give a signpost for this renormalon calculus of the future. So this is my last transparency. Thank you very much for your attention.
Okay, thank you, Marcus, for that very nice talk. I think more equations was better in
yes.
this instance. Questions? Kolya? Kostya.
So it's quite remarkable that it's very interesting that you find this deviation from the Parisitov formula. Do you have a diagrammatic explanation of this 1 over n shifts in the exponent?
Well, you can actually see that this should actually you can actually see that this should give 1 over n corrections to the diagrammatics. Yes, we don't have a direct calculation because you have to go to next to leading order, so you have to consider corrections to Babel diagrams. But this should have a diagrammatic explanation. This is actually a very good question because people. What is interesting is that people thought that 1 over n corrections wouldn't change the location of the Borel singularity, right? People thought that this would correct. But what we find is that 1 over n corrections actually split the renormalon singularity into two. And this is actually the new phenomenon that was, in a sense, missed by the traditional approach. So people would thought that 1 over n corrections wouldn't change the strength of the exponentially small, but just give corrections to the power series. But they wouldn't think that it would split the singularity. So
it becomes a cut?
No, just in terms of singularities in the Borel plane, this means that at the leading singularity at large n, when you include finite n corrections, it splits into two. Okay.
But they are still poles.
No, they are in general they are branch cuts, both of them.
Shota.
So if I understand correctly, this is renormalons are for infinite volume.
Yes.
And do you have an idea like what happens if you put the theory on a finite volume?
Well, in finite volume, that would be very interesting to develop. I think there could be still something like renormalons because the perturbative series is still going to be factorially divergent, and it's not clear that all the singularities are all the exponentially small corrections are going to have a purely semi-classical origin. This would be achievable, I think, also because these models can, the ground state energy at finite volume can be computed with integrality. So this, I think, is one of the really interesting open problems to address in the future. It's clear that in finite volume, there is more chances that instantons do the job, okay? But I think there is still some place for renormalons to play a role there.
Kolya?
So resurgence connects the asymptotics of the perturbative series with, say, the first non-perturbative correction. Mm-hmm. But sometimes the first few perturbative coefficients are connected to the first few coefficient in the exponentially small correction by some bridge equation. If you have, say, a differential equation. Mm-hmm. So do you expect something similar here for these integral equations, ON or these principal models?
So that there is some, that you can extract the whole series with
you. I mean that you can relate the beginning of the perturbative series, not the asymptotics, mm-hmm. but the beginning of the exponentially small correction directly, mm-hmm. without going to the asymptotics. Like in this Eccles bridge equations, this is what you do.
I see. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's in a sense that would solve a lot of our problems. If we had something like this for the integral equation, that would be fantastic. And this also would give a systematic way of computing this transseries more systematic. But I don't know how to do that. Yeah, that's again another important technical problem to be solved. Yeah.
Kolya.
So you know, in the QCD at least, that finite temperature instanton decomposes into n lumps.
Yes.
So could those be kind of related to the
yes, that's actually, some people have thought that, you know, that the composition of instantons in fractons could explain this thing. But actually, the fact that you have now these sort of corrections makes life, again, more complicated. Because you see, this introduces an additional fact. Usually people will say, okay, you have D over N, essentially, and then you decompose your instanton in fractons, and here you are. This is a fracton. But now with this additional factor, this becomes even more complicated to be interpreted semi-classically, because you don't longer have D over N, but you have N times, 2 over N minus 2, or N minus 1 over N. So this actually complicates the fracton picture of renormalons.
More questions? Oh, yeah, sorry. Just wait for the microphone. Yeah, okay.
If you say that it's not always clear how to compute them, is it at least clear that it's well defined? I mean, this trans series in all cases.
Yeah. Now, trans series, you see. Transseries are well defined once you agree on doing a perturbative expansion. Once you have an asymptotic expansion, the transseries that follows is well defined. But it's clear that transseries, these exponential small corrections, are attached to the fact that you did a perturbative expansion. So these renormalon corrections only have sense once you decided that your first approximation is going to be perturbative series. Okay? Now, in some cases, still these renormalon corrections can give you physical intuition about direct observables. For example, if you are studying the energy gap of a superconductor, you can see that the energy gap of this superconductor is going to be essentially controlled by this type of renormalon effects. So they actually give you power corrections, a qualitative window into power corrections in theories in which there are exponentially small corrections. So in that sense, you know, they actually help for actual physical quantities, like energy gaps.
I mean, what I meant is, maybe it was not completely clear, but like originally Toft also showed some examples in simple cases. I mean, this sum over bubbles.
Yes.
But the sum over bubbles is in the end just some particular subclass of diagrams.
Sure.
I mean, some resummation of perturbation theory.
And yes.
That's why I'm asking whether it's really
no.
defined. One guy says, let's resum this, another says, let's resum
that. Yeah, but I agree with you. I mean, you cannot select diagrams according to your wishes. These diagrams are selected by large N, so there is an extra parameter that controls. If you start like selecting diagrams, you could change the shape of the exponential small correction and so on. But once you take renormalized perturbation theory, which is uniquely defined, the asymptotic series is uniquely defined, then this actually defines already the type of transseries that you are going to obtain. So the transseries, as I said, once you have your asymptotic series set up, the transseries is pretty much defined up to overall coefficients. Now, the value of the overall coefficients of these exponential number corrections are very subtle because they depend on your resummation choices, but in principle, there is a single choice of coefficients that reproduce the exact answer. So in that sense, it's a well-defined object.
More questions? So I had a question actually about, if we went away from field theories and to string theory,
yes.
D-brains, of course, famously are sort of instantons. Is there a picture where what renormalons might be in string theory?
Absolutely. Well, I think in string theory, of course, there are exponential small corrections, but as far as we know, they are the ones that we know are due to D-brains, so they are instanton type. Now, I don't know if there are renormalons in string theory. Okay. Now, renormalons are typically absent in supersymmetric theories. So, for example, there are no renormalons, say, in N equal 4 super-Young Mills. There are no renormalons in many extended supersymmetric theories. So, I don't think that in string theory, I would be surprised if there are renormalon effects. But there are instanton effects, and you can play the same game of relating the perturbative series to the non-perturbative correction, and these people have done in minimal string theory and things like that, yeah.
But what about non-supersymmetric string theories, or like a two-dimensional string theory?
Like C equal 1, yeah. I wouldn't expect renormalons there, I would say. But you know, this is more like a large N quantum mechanical model, right? So, you know, there are no renormalons. Typically, there are no renormalons in quantum mechanics, so I wouldn't expect renormalons there.
Okay, thanks. More questions? If not, let's thank Mario.